On Tuesday, November 8th, voters in Wisconsin will choose candidates for a wide range of public offices. Today, we feature conversations with candidates for Wisconsin's 29th and 31st state Senate seats. In Wisconsin's 31st Senate District, Republican Dave Estenson hopes to unseat incumbent Democrat Jeff Smith in western Wisconsin. But first, we turn to Wisconsin's 29th Senate District, where Democrat Bob Look is squaring off against Republican Corey Tomchek in a seat currently held by retiring Republican Senator Jerry Petruski. We first talk with Corey Tomchek of Mozanine and founder of Industrial Recyclers of Wisconsin.
I am going to be 60 years old this October. I've been married to my wife, Becky, for 39 years. We have two grown sons and three grandchildren. I have, as you said in the introduction, I started Industrial Recyclers of Wisconsin, better known as IRO. We have been in business for 32 years. Currently, we have 22 employees. We were as high as 48 when we had a garbage services company, but we've sold that a few years ago. I'm running because I'm not a person to sit on the sidelines and watch what's going on, and I want to be involved and offer help. I've not run for a state government position before because I was always represented by Republicans at a time when I would be interested in giving of my time to serve. And when Jerry Petruski decided to retire, that was my opportunity to step up and serve the people of the district.
Businesses as yours face pretty significant workforce challenges with more jobs open than workers are available to fill them. What can lawmakers do to help mitigate this situation?
Lawmakers need to make sure that the support that's given to people does not become a cradle instead of a safety net. I personally have a problem with how unemployment rates are calculated. I believe they get changed quite often, depending on the administration that's in command and control at the time. I think there's more people out there that are able to work than are actually working, and I think it's become too easy for them to sit on the sidelines and take government handouts and government support and live a level of life that they can get by on. And that's not what I believe, and I think that's not what a lot of people in the 29th District believe government support should be.
Inflation continues to be top-of-mind issue for many working families in Wisconsin. It's a big pocketbook issue, of course. What steps can be taken at the state level to address rising inflation and fears of recession, and what legislative steps would you consider taking?
Fears of recession are real, and people should be aware and planning for that. As far as the state level, I think about the only thing that we can do is make sure that the tax burden that the legislature puts on the people of Wisconsin is as low as it possibly can be and allow them to keep more of their own money.
Wisconsin's 172-year-old abortion ban was reinstated after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Should Wisconsin's existing abortion law be updated in any way?
No.
Would you support exceptions in cases involving rape or incest?
As a Catholic, I struggle very much with that issue. I believe that life is life. As an adoptive parent, I would support the opportunity for someone who is having a child that they didn't ask for, didn't want, give that life an opportunity to grow and to find a home that would love them, support them, and help them come to be their best person and their best selves. Adoption is too difficult, and we need to make it better, easier, so that those lives can be cared for.
Despite multiple government audits that show no evidence of fraud in the 2020 elections, some Wisconsin voters still have concerns about election integrity. How would you address those concerns and restore faith in the voting process for those voters?
This Wisconsin voter has concerns about election integrity, and if I am elected, I will do everything in my power to ensure that the changes that the current legislature put forth and were vetoed by Governor Evers would come back to the governor's desk and get pushed through.
Turning to education, Mr. Tomchek, on the issue of education and education policy, what would your top priorities be?
My top priority is to make sure that the funding that is spent on the education of children is spent wisely and is spent equitably across the state. And the word equity is a hot-button issue, and people have all kinds of different definitions that they apply to it. But I think that the children in northern Wisconsin have a right to as good of quality of education in terms of money spent on their education as the children in a larger municipal area of the state of Wisconsin. So I would look very hard at where the money goes, how the money is spent, and the results of the money that is spent. If a school district is getting a whole bunch of money, but they're putting out a student that can't function in society, well, there's a problem, and drastic things need to happen to correct that problem.
What can we do to attract and maintain qualified teachers in the state?
One thing is to show teachers that that we have a system in place that's going to support education of students and not support teachers who are radicalized or are utilizing their position to indoctrinate children. I don't believe that the teachers as a whole are like that, but right now those that are have a spotlight, let's say, turned on them and are garnering a lot of attention.
Kind of in that same vein, what role should schools play in teaching children about social issues such as race or sexuality?
Schools have a very limited place in teaching about sexuality. It is an aberration that we're talking about sex to children in grade school. Would be vehemently opposed to anything like that. As far as race, I think it's silly to think that children don't know what their race is or who their heritage is. That is also up to the parents.
How much authority should parents have over what curriculum is taught to their kids?
Parents should have all authority over curriculum that's taught to their kids. If a parent decides that the child is going to be homeschooled, then they have all of it. If a parent is sending their child to a public school, well, then they do have to give up some control, but they need to also exercise their rights to influence the school board and the school administration through involvement and attending meetings and having dialogue with that administration. If a school district's parents say, hey, we're not going to teach this type of stuff in our school district, then that school district better adhere to the needs of the parents and the parental wishes.
How do we keep our schools and communities safe in the wake of recent shootings?
It blows my mind that there is any kind of a school shooting happening, given what's going on in recent history in the United States. Schools that have not taken measures to protect themselves, harden their facilities, are just, you know, begging for trouble. I think criminals, people who perpetrate these types of crimes, I'm all for capital punishment. You come into a school and you start shooting up a school, I would like to see that person hanging in the market square downtown in the next week. I have no patience for it, no sympathy for it, no compassion for it.
Do you think the state should be adding more funding for school safety, as you mentioned?
To my knowledge, we have put so much money into schools. Where that funding goes is controlled by sometimes by the state, as I understand correctly, and most of the time by the school district itself. So where the money is being used is a choice of that school district, I guess. And if they don't think that it's wise to harden their facilities, then you get what you decide. We put enough money into educating children, and we need to do a better job of where that money gets spent.
A lot of individuals and families around our state and around the country, for that matter, are upset about the divide in politics. Where do you see opportunities for bipartisan cooperation?
I do not see any opportunities for bipartisan cooperation. The left is so far left. They are anti-American, public unity. A lot of those people just need to be gone. I have no patience for it.
Turning to the environment, how should state address contamination by PFAS and other chemicals in our local water supplies?
PFAS issue is, as typical government entities, moving the goalposts, moving the, it's the new issue, so we got to make it, it's all over the news, and the news is complacent in making it into this big demon. PFAS was around for quite a long time, and it really wasn't an issue until someone created an issue out of it. Now, I am certainly not saying that we all need to go out and drink gallons of PFAS. We don't want it in our drinking water. But the reality is that at one time, people thought it was okay to have this type of chemical, use these chemicals for fire controls and that kind of things. No one knew what that secondary impact was going to be or how it was going to hang around forever. I grew up as a generation that swam in cow ponds on farms to cool off in the hot summer and drank from vinyl garden hoses that had been laying out in the sun all day. We lived our lives and we've moved on. I don't see that PFAS is exceptionally more than that unless someone can provide me with information that says we're going to start growing extra limbs.
In the final minute or two, please let us know what the things that separate you from your opponent and what else you'd like voters to know about you, the things that we have not discussed.
We don't have enough time. I tell people that, I'm running as a Republican because there's no conservative brand that I can be on the ballot under. You know, I am first a conservative, and second a Republican. I am a person of traditional values. I'm a person of faith, and if I'm put into the Senate seat for the 29th district, I will look at everything in front of me with that kind of guidance. I've said on the campaign trail many times, I think what we need to do is we need to tax less, we need to spend less, and we need to regulate less. I trust the people in a county or I trust the people in a municipality to manage their tax dollars better than I trust Madison to do it for them. So,
Mr. Tomczyk, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Our special election coverage continues in just a few moments. We just heard from Corey Tomczyk, the Republican seeking Wisconsin's 29th Senate seat. Now we'll hear from his opponent, Bob Look, the Democratic candidate in this race.
Well, I've been a broadcaster for well over 40 years. Had spent a lot of time here in the Wausau and central Wisconsin area. First came here in 1988. As the program director for WDEZ radio here in the Wausau area. And then went off to South Dakota for a while, worked out there, and then came back to the Wausau area in 1998 as the new morning host for WSAU radio after the passing of Howard Gernetzky, who had been on the morning show there for quite some time. Why I'm running more than anything else is the fact that I just feel that the state legislature, the assembly, and the Senate right now are not doing what they're sent to Madison to do, and that's represent their areas. And why I say that is when you have so many of these sessions that are what they call gavel in and gavel out, basically they gavel the body there, the assembly or the Senate in session, and then immediately just gavel out, especially when there's issues to be debated or discussed. It just rub me the wrong way. If you're being sent to Madison to represent your area, you should be there representing, and you should be in discussion, in debate, trying to find solutions to problems and not just ignoring them and passing the buck to somebody else.
Businesses today face significant workforce challenges with more jobs open than workers available to fill them. What can lawmakers do to help mitigate the situation?
Well, I don't know if it's as much what the legislators could do to make the situation better. It's a situation where the tables have been reversed a bit here over time, where it used to be a employer's market where you basically had the pick of whomever and for whatever. It's kind of changed around where the working force has gotten to be a little bit more particular and a little bit more specialized and maybe just a little bit more aggressive in looking for either careers or positions that fit their abilities and also fit their enthusiasm whether to work for that employer.
One of the larger issues related to the economy is inflation, as it continues to be top of mind for many working families in the state. What steps can be taken at the state level to address rising inflation and fears of a recession, and what legislative steps would you consider taking?
Well, legislative steps in the state of Wisconsin, could be on just the things that we have direct responsibility for. A lot of inflation has been dictated by events worldwide, and also a large, especially the oil industry, pharmaceuticals, and that have gone off and picked up incredible profit margins during tough times for Americans, and it's just is unfair, basically unfair. I know that on the national level, there's been talk about a gouge in a profits tax, a windfall profit tax that's been bantied about. That could be a help. But as far as the inflation rate, when the prices go up, it becomes a cascade and an avalanche of effects affecting everyone down the road.
Should Wisconsin's existing abortion law be updated in any way?
It should be updated as soon as possible. And that was one of the gavel ins and gavel outs that the past legislature dealt with. When the Roe decision by the U.S. Supreme Court was made, and basically saying, okay, it's a state's issue. Well, we had the state of Wisconsin with a law that was put on the books in 1849 as what they had as their law. I can't help but say things have changed over that time period. And also the fact that the wording on it, nobody is advocating just ending life or that. But my question is, the woman and her doctor and her family, they must make their decision on their own for their own health issues.
Turning to education and education policy, what would your top priority be?
What I think has been a tragic, especially for the state that I love, is the reduction in what the state of Wisconsin has contributed to maintaining the budget and maintaining the money that goes towards education, whether it be grade school right on up through the ranks, that percentage has steadily dropped ever since the Walker administration. When the claims of, we're going to cut taxes, well, they cut taxes away from funds going to schools and the suffering that local school boards had just trying to make ends meet, trying to perform the duties and the specialty to make sure that all our kids in the state of Wisconsin get a good education has been basically filleted and cut apart piece by piece by just basically underfunding.
What role should schools play in teaching children about social issues such as race or sexuality?
Well, I think that's all part of education, and that's a part of what the school curriculum is. I could go back to in my days, back to school, and again, that is quite a few years ago. But you can't go into an education situation and just shut off, well, we're only going to deal with this or only deal with that. There has to be clear cut truth and clear-cut facts that the student gets presented and learns. And again, students, as they learn and as they grow, they begin to make decisions on their own.
And at the same time, how much authority should parents have over what curriculum is being taught to their kids?
Well, of course, they can have input, but that's where your elected school boards and your communities, help lay out that structure.
Bob, how do we keep our schools and communities safe in the wake of recent shootings?
Well, it would be nice if there would be serious discussions by common sense people about gun laws and gun control. And again, as soon as those words are stated, it seems to be everyone starts panicking about, oh, well, they're taking away our guns. Well, we're not talking about taking away our guns. Let's talk about, simple things, like gun registration to red flag laws. I can only go back to maybe hypotheses. And, of course, people will say, well, that was then. But I lost my wife on March 22nd, 2017, in a situation where she was shot and killed on the job. And if red flag laws would have been in existence at that point in time, the person who did those shootings that fateful day may have had their weapons confiscated because they were declared or determined to be a threat to others. Now, again, hindsight is 20/20, whether that would have ended that, but in the personal case as mine, I can't help but say, it would have been nice if my wife and myself could have actually celebrated our 30th anniversary earlier this year.
Where do you see opportunities for bipartisan cooperation in the legislature?
I see bipartisanship as a reality. The more and more I go around and meet people within the district, or anytime I'm speaking with anybody, matter whether they're young, middle-aged, older, the one thing that is a common theme is that we all want the best or try to do the best for one another and our families. And that's why I believe that this election is about the common sense majority taking hold. That is not just a party, but that's the people.
Looking at the environment, Bob, one of the largest, or pretty much the largest issue we have right now is clean water. Mm. How should the state address contamination by PFAS or other chemicals and situations in local water supplies across the state?
I like to go back to into the time machine back in the days when Senator Gaylord Nelson with his starting up of Earth Day and the basically the awareness for a lot of folks of our environment, clean water, clean air. And again, clean water, especially up here in this part of the world, is important. There has to be a lot closer when there are companies that come in to want to either mine some minerals and things of that nature. You have to take a very close look and a very patient look at what are the advantages, what are the realistic things that are going to be taken away, and how we make sure that we do not fritter away our clean water just for a quick buck.
In the final minute, please share a thing or two that separate you from your opponent and what else you'd like voters to know about you that we haven't talked about.
I think the biggest difference between myself and my opponent, and again, I will never say anything negative about the opponent. I don't view my opponent as an enemy. We're all trying to do the best we possibly can. But what I believe I bring to the table is a sense of being able to communicate with everyone. I want to hear a dissenting side. If someone does not agree with me, okay, well, I'd like to hear why you don't, because I may not be seeing an issue from your perspective, and I may be shutting off some information that may alter or change my mind. The point being is I've learned a heck of a lot more in my life, not by talking, but by listening.
Bob, thank you so much again for joining us today.
Well, thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Now we turn our attention to the state's 31st Senate district, starting with the incumbent in the race, Democrat Jeff Smith.
Well, someone who really relishes the idea of protecting our environment and our schools and democracy in the state of Wisconsin, but particularly Western Wisconsin. I am a lifelong of Eau Claire County and grew up in the city of Eau Claire and raised my family here with my wife. And we have a lot to lose if we don't the future for our children.
Senator Smith, the businesses today face significant workforce challenges with more jobs open than there are available workers to fill them. What can lawmakers do to help mitigate this situation?
You know, one of the things we know that has happened, of course, during the pandemic, people of the baby boomer generation thought, well, I was going to retire anyway, so I'm not going back. And that is a huge impact. And, of course, we knew that was coming. Unfortunately, I have to say that we did not prepare as a nation and as a state for that inevitable change in our workforce. But the other part that is really important, I think, is that we have not, or even before that, we neglected the idea that childcare has become so expensive for families that a lot of people have left or not entered the workforce because it's not worth the paycheck that they get. I mean, I just heard a story of someone who figured it out that they would only be making a month after paying for daycare, so that why go to work? So they stayed home. And I think that's even before the pandemic. During the pandemic, 25% of our daycare centers closed and did not reopen. And again, we as the state can do a lot to work hand in hand with the business community as well as the public to make sure that we are providing incentive and maybe even providing potential grants and others that can make sure that people are being paid what they should get paid to take our most valuable resources and prepare them for their school age years. And one comment that was made recently at a conference I was in was, let's not forget that the most important years of anyone's life is birth to 6 years old, when their brain is developing more than any other time in their life. And we should not leave it up to inexperienced teenagers to just watch them during that time, when in fact we should be having professionals there and paying them what they're worth so that they are ready for life.
Should Wisconsin's existing abortion law be updated in any way?
It should be repealed. We should not be under the realm of a 1849 law that was enacted before women even had a voice in government. They were not able to run for office. They were not able to vote. Right now, we are in a world where we have learned a lot in the last 170 years, hopefully, and supposedly made progress. I feel like we have gone backwards with the Supreme Court ruling, and we need and people need to understand that abortion is health care. It is a part of the health care process for important piece of the reproductive health that women must go through if they are able to overcome some difficulties in a pregnancy. I've heard some really awful stories from doctors and other medical professions, and women who have gone terrible and heartbreaking pregnancies, that they should have the option, and a doctor should have the option without being fearful that they're going to be imprisoned for actually performing the operation needed to save someone's life.
Despite multiple government audits that show no evidence of fraud in the 2020 elections, there are some Wisconsin voters that still have concerns about election integrity. How would you address those concerns and restore faith in the voting process for those voters?
Well, first of all, we need to have leaders and politicians stop continuing the lie that the 2020 election was not fair. We know, in fact, it was under the audits that were taken for sure. But it's, to me, frustrating to me as I came from town government and know how important and how valuable our clerks and the poll workers who out of civic duty, do great work to be sure that our elections are conducted in a fair fashion. And people need to get off of this crazy wagon of elections that were not fair because they were, and how dangerous that is to our democracy to continue that kind of talk and think that you overturn elections when they don't turn out the way you wish.
Turning now to education and education policy, what is your top priority?
My top priority for our public schools is to be sure they are properly funded. We need to lift revenue limits that we have placed on them, which has been awful, and restricted them from doing the things they need to do that they know they need to do district by district. And one of those things it includes discontinuing this awful voucher program so that those of us who are paying for our public schools are not also for a private school system. We are right now in a place where we're supporting two school systems, and we can't do that. We're lucky to be able to provide for one school system, which is public, and there's a reason for that. So my priority is to turn that attention back to putting our support into our public schools the way it should be, the way they should be supported.
What role should schools play in teaching children about social issues such as race or sexuality?
The role that schools play is about health, and sexuality is health, and making sure that children realize the risk that they take if they choose to conduct risky behavior, like anything else. It isn't the role of the schools, of course, to teach children and how to conduct those risky behaviors, but to be sure they understand that they are risky.
And how much authority or input should parents have over what curriculum is taught to their children at school?
There is a fine line that we should not cross as parents to try to get their own individual views on to everyone else. And I know sometimes the loudest parents will show up at meetings and say they should ban books that they don't like, or they should change the curriculum to their own liking. And once again, we need to remember who the professionals are here. I'd really like to question anybody who goes to these, how much time they spent in the classroom and really do understand what is being taught and how things are being taught, because generally I think they probably have just been listening to rumors. And I can tell you as a fact that the teachers are doing the best they can with what they have. And unfortunately, we also need to remove the pressures of teaching to the test and let teachers teach to the curriculum that we really want our students to learn from.
Senator Smith, how do we keep our schools and the community safe in the wake of recent deadly shootings?
No one needs a high magazine to go hunting. No one needs assault weapons to go hunting. I know that there will be the argument, and I have had this occur often, that there's a fear that they need to protect themselves from the government or from, and I heard recently said someone tell me that, you know, they're ready for the people when they are parachuting in to attack our communities. Well, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. But we can do things, for instance, to be sure we have universal background checks. We can pass what we call red flag laws to protect people from them, persons who are in crisis from hurting themselves and others. And I'm really frustrated to hear my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, every time there's a crisis, it's about mental health. Well, if it truly is about mental health, then let's at least address those two areas. It's easy.
You mentioned a couple of times throughout our conversation just now that at least alluded to some of the challenges you have with folks on the other side of the aisle. Where do you see opportunities for bipartisanship in the state legislature?
I'm glad you asked that, Rick, because we have a place right now where the majority party leaders actually keep us separated as much as possible, so we do not build the relationships that we need to build to trust each other and to work together. And I could go into depth about that, but we really need to find a way to have collaboration and to be able to debate these issues legitimately and honestly, and work and trust each other to get these important matters done.
I'd like to turn a little bit towards water and water quality. How should the state address contamination by PFAS and other chemicals in local water supplies around the state?
First, we need to be testing. One thing we asked that we could not get from the Joint Finance Committee, which is controlled by the Republicans, was to even allow us to put towards the municipalities so they could have what they needed to test their water. Let's start with that. That is a very simple thing, because we know that PFAS is out there. And for municipalities who have been able to afford to test on their own, they have found it. And then we know there are solutions. The technology is developing and it's getting better, and we're able to protect our families and our community from the poison of PFAS.
Senator Smith, in the last minute, please share the things that separate you from your opponent, and if there's anything else you'd like voters to know about you.
Well, what they should know about me is that I've been around long enough in western Wisconsin to feel like I know that these issues, including ensuring that agriculture is such an important piece of our economy, that our public schools in rural areas are suffering because of the rules that have come down from Madison and the legislature, who think they know better. I know that this lack of relationships that we have in politics is hurting us tremendously, and that gerrymandering is pretty much killed democracy right now in the state of Wisconsin.
Senator Smith, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rick.
Our special election coverage continues in just a few moments. You just heard from Jeff Smith, the Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 31st State Senate District. Now we turn to his challenger, Republican Dave Estenson.
Well, I am running because I got sick of saying somebody needs to do something about the problems that we're seeing now. And I have two children, two little girls at home, and two stepboys that are older and out of the house. And I have two grandchildren. So I am concerned about the state of affairs that we are leaving them. So I have a business now that affords me the time to run. So that's why I'm stepping up.
As a business owner, I'd like to ask you about the economy. Businesses are really facing a tough time with workforce challenges, more jobs open than workers. What do you think lawmakers could do to help mitigate this situation?
Well, I think we as lawmakers could do a lot of different things. Promoting trades through schools is a very big one. I'm on the White House School Board, and we've been doing a lot of good things here at the schools to promote the trades. And if a student decides early enough, they can actually graduate from high school with a diploma and an associate's degree. And that allows them to be able to enter the workforce faster into the trade that they want to, or they can enter into a four-year university at an advanced level, and that way they're not spending so much time there. They can enter 2 years earlier than they would and with less debt. So that's one thing that I really feel strongly about, and I'm very proud of what we're doing up here in that aspect. Another thing that we could really do is streamline some of the licensing issues that we're seeing nowadays. It can take months, if not even years, to get a license, and that is really preventing people from working in the trade or the profession that they've chosen. So that is definitely something that we need to look at for the state. And another thing that we really need to look at, and what we're struggling with up here in rural Wisconsin, is access to childcare. You know, mm-hmm. We need to, as at the state level, we need to be able to create an environment that allows people to have access to high quality and affordable childcare. So that way, it's not such a strain on families, and they can be able to enter or reenter the workforce. So those are some of the things that I think we can do to increase our labor shortage, or our increase our labor supply, so that way there isn't a shortage.
What about tackling inflation? This continues to persist. Problems with fears of recession. What do you think that the state legislature could do, compared to what the federal government can do?
Oh, absolutely. Inflation is such a big issue right now. You know, people are choosing whether they buy gas for their car or groceries to put on the table. And as we know, inflation is basically it's too many dollars chasing too few goods. And it is absolutely government caused. Some of the things that we can do at the state level is to, end the tax and spend policies that have been so crippling to families. We need to make sure that people are able to keep more of the money that they've hard earned and use that, so that way they can, they don't have to make those tough choices, as those choices aren't as tough for them. And that's what we can definitely do at the state level is, the tax policy and letting people keep more of their own money.
Let's shift gears here to abortion. This has been a national conversation for the last several months. Do you think that Wisconsin's existing abortion law should be updated in any way?
Well, I'll tell you, I am pro-life, and I as a father of four and a grandfather of two, again, I believe I in pro-life. I am pro-life, and as a police officer, a former police officer, I understand how important language is in specific legislation and how it is applied to current issues. And it is one of those issues that I really need to look into, to see where that language can be updated and go from there.
How about the elections? There have been multiple government audits on the 2020 election. There's been no evidence of fraud shown in those, but some Wisconsin voters still have concerns about election integrity. How would you address those concerns and restore faith in the voting process for those voters who feel that way?
Yeah, no, I completely understand the frustration with what happened in the 2020 elections. And I believe that the legislature did pass bills that would address those specific issues. Unfortunately, those bills that were passed were vetoed by the governor. And it was common sense stuff, tightening up some of the absentee voter type issues. I think repassing those laws and getting them signed into law would absolutely restore faith in the election process.
We talked a little bit earlier about schools and your passion for ensuring that schools have those partnerships with trade programs. What would you say your top priority in education is if you're elected?
Yeah, absolutely. Education really is one of my my top priorities. I've been on the school board for the last year and a half, and we've been doing some really great things up here. Some of the things that I'm seeing is what we need to do is we need to make sure that parents have the right choices and the resources to support those choices, because they ultimately know what's best for their child in their education. So whether that's public school, private school, charter, homeschool, that sort of things, we need to make sure that parents have those opportunities and resources to make those best choices. The other thing that I really would love to see and would work hard for would be to allow schools to make the best decisions on how to educate the kids in their community. Every community is different. And our school administrators know, and they all share the same passion for success for the children that they're teaching. So giving the schools more of a freedom to decide how they're going to implement educational goals is really something that I want to work towards.
What role do you think schools should play in teaching children about social issues like race and sexuality? These have been hot topics, and you're a school board member. What do you think?
We need to teach history, and we need to teach, and sometimes those hot button issues will come up because we do have a storied past. But ultimately, the choice needs to be with the parents. Okay, the parents need to decide whether that's in the community, through getting more involved and showing up to school board meetings. The parents need to make those decisions on whether or not, you know, the certain topics are discussed, and go from there.
You spent a lot of years in law enforcement. I want to ask you about public safety. There has been, of course, a spate of deadly shootings in schools and communities. How do we keep our schools and communities safe? What are some strategies?
And every school shooting is an absolute tragedy. It absolutely is. You know, again, as a father and a grandfather and a law enforcement officer, I have seen it's one of those things that worries me. The way that the trends of this, that the way that it's been going, you know, it's one of those things where there is no magic pill to solve this problem. There is no way to just magically make all of this disappear. So, you know, I've seen the behind the scenes stuff. I'm very highly trained in school safety procedures. And that sort of thing, it can be well done, and I believe we are doing as good of a job as we can do. Ultimately, it comes down to community mental health. We need to prevent the situation from happening in the first place. So focusing on mental health and building those community relationships is really the way to lessen the degree of this horrible trend that we're seeing.
We have kind of a unique situation in Wisconsin with a divided government. We have a Democratic for a governor. We have a Republican-controlled legislature. Where do you see opportunities for bipartisan cooperation to move the state forward?
You know, I'm a solutions guy. We can diagnose the problem to death, but if you don't have a solution, it is, you know, then really what do you have? So I am a solutions guy. I'm going down to Madison to fix problems. And I'll tell you, being a former police officer, I have had to work with people of many different backgrounds and many different situations or ideologies, that sort of thing. And I can tell you that from my experience, a good solution can come from anywhere. And I am not part of that system of, you know, Democrat versus Republican. I am an individual thinker, and I am willing to work with anyone that has a good solution, no matter what letter is behind their name. And that's what we have to get back to.
Turning to the environment, many communities across the state are struggling to deal with PFAS and other chemicals in their local water supplies. How should the state address that?
Yes, absolutely. You know, everyone wants clean air and water. You know, unfortunately, there's still a lot that is unknown about PFAS and its effects. So I support the efforts that are ongoing, and I support continuing efforts by the DNR and the EPA to research those effects and, you know, to come up with science-based solutions for the mitigation and cleanup. Because ultimately, we have to be able to leave a clean and environment for our children.
We have about 30 seconds left. I just want to give you the opportunity to just share what you want voters to know about you before they go to the polls in November.
Thank you very much. I am a solutions-based guy. I am not one of these hardcore partisan people, and I am excited to be able to go down there, go down to Madison, and work with whoever I need to get the right things done, because our system is so broken. You know, being one part of the Senate and what, you know, one part of the legislature, I can't, it's hard to promise that any individual policy measure will get passed, but there's one promise that I can make, and that is no one will outwork me.
Dave, I want to thank you for taking the time today and sharing your thoughts with us. We truly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to our special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. You can hear all of our candidate interviews after they air at WPR.org/election20.